one thing we're not going to talk about is anything to do with deflated footballs.
Oh my god.
It's just the worst.
It's the worst. And, like, I know that I'm biased, but I like to think that I wouldn't care if I was not a Patriots fan.
I feel the same way. I just thought of that, like, an hour ago. And if I was saying, if this was happening in Seattle, I don't think I would care. I would just be like, shut up, let's play football.
Yeah, I definitely don't care. And you know the NFL is laughing all the way to the bank because no one's talking about Ray Rice or steroids right now, or concussions.
Very true. So ridiculous.
I'm trying to finish up a cough drop here.
No worries.
I got a little bit of a cold, but like Brady, but also like Brady, I'm calling myself 100% for the podcast.
I like to hear that. Yeah, I've definitely been kind of out of the loop when it comes to Super Bowl coverage this week, just because of the crazy snowstorm. I've just been kind of out of it for 48 hours, which is kind of nice because the media hype machine the week before the Super Bowl is usually the worst ever.
Oh, definitely.
And I have no sense in paying attention to most of it. I'm just ready for them to hit it on Sunday.
Yeah, it's I always joke around that the only thing I hate more than post-game coverage is pre-game coverage. And the Super Bowl is like the ultimate pre-game coverage. It's 2 weeks of pre-game coverage, and then they turn on the TV. They start the broadcast at 12 o'clock for a 6:30 game.
I saw that's child's play. I heard that NBC is covering the game this year. And that they're going to stream, like, 11 hours of coverage throughout the day.
Oh, boy.
Which is just nonsense. You could write a movie script in that time. What are we doing watching 12 hours of pregame? That's just complete nonsense.
Yeah, it's bonkers.
Totally bonkers. We certainly have to talk about the big game because, A, our team's in it, and, B, it's, you know, it's the most watched thing every year in America, correct?
Yeah, and, like, every year they have like they're adding to the list of countries every year, broadcast in 184 countries, whatever. It's like, it gets bigger every time.
And the fact that this is still such a huge game and that the NFL is still bulletproof despite all the horrendous things that have happened over the last 2 years just points to how big of a sport it really is.
Mm-hmm.
The bubble has to burst at some point, but it ain't happening this year. But I'm going to throw an okey-doke at you and skip Super Bowl stuff to start because it's so bitterly cold and my entire neighborhood and county and state is buried in 2 feet of snow that I want to think about a warm weather sport. So I wanted to talk golf very quickly before we dive into the Super Bowl topic.
Only Justin thinks that the beginning of golf season is more important than the Super Bowl. And I applaud you for it.
Hey, listen, there's a big tournament that starts tomorrow, and by big, I mean one of the more exciting ones, the TPC at TPC Scottsdale, which, you know, just happens to be right down the street from where the Super Bowl is this year.
Yep.
So always a fun tournament to watch, and it's Tiger's first tournament of the year, so that should be fun.
Toothless Tiger.
What's that?
Toothless Tiger.
Toothless Tiger, yeah, and he hasn't played in the tournament in like a decade, and so I think it'll be fun. It'll be a fun take, especially on that 16th hole, which is just bananas. It's essentially a frat party all weekend long.
It's really fun, and it's like someone stuck a baseball field on a golf course.
Yeah, it's totally what it is. And the folks who put that event on, like they do a great job of knowing who they are. You know, they realize that they're not the most prestigious event on tour. They realize that they're not the most schwankiest event on tour. They know, hey, people are coming here because it's the dead of winter in half the country, and they're coming here for our ridiculous environment on the 16th hole, which is essentially like, yeah, it's like going to a baseball or football game around a par three. It's so absurd.
Yeah.
And I know that they made a lot of changes, I believe, since the last tournament to bring in even more folks to sit around that hole and some changes to the course itself. So I'm looking forward to that. In addition to that, I want to say friend of the show, but that's a total lie. I'd say athlete that the show admires, Ricky Fowler, just re-signed up with Cobra and Puma Golf. And I just thought this was important to note because we've alluded to Ricky and kind of the Puma brand several times on the course of the podcast and what he and that brand have done for the sport of golf and kind of helped evolve the fashion and the athletic wear there, of course, you know, in addition to all the big companies too. But Puma's kind of carved out a really unique niche, both in golf and elsewhere. And I thought it was great news that Ricky was going to continue their partnership with them and continue kind of pushing the envelope when it comes to golf performance apparel and golf fashion apparel. So I was happy to see that as a fan of golf and as a fan of, you know, golf apparel design.
Yeah, he's really driving the bus for the brand right now, at least in America, I would say. I'm sure in Europe it's a different story, but when I think of Puma, I think of Ricky Fowler first off.
Absolutely. And I think Puma would be very happy that you said that. And then in the same vein, about a month ago, roughly, I'm not sure the time, but local golf major winner, Mr. Keegan Bradley, he moved sponsorship. So he was with Tommy Hilfiger for the past few years. He's keeping his relationship with the Jordan brand when he wears his kind of Jordan spikes on the course. But he signed with an even more niche company called Travis Matthew. And Travis Matthew is a small lifestyle and golf brand that, you know, started a few years ago. And they have some golfers on tour, but a lot of guys who are kind of under the radar, especially to the casual golf fan. But Keegan Bradley and Travis Matthew are now partners, and they even kicked it off with a big brand launch video that showed Keegan in some of their apparel and showed Keegan talking about the brand and being really excited about it. First off, I think it's a great match, you know, kind of that casual golf look that Keegan seems to pull off really well. And I was also intrigued that, hey, I wonder if there's going to be more kind of niche companies like Travis Matthew that are going to be able to attract stars that have as much clout as Keegan Bradley does. I actually purchased a Travis Matthew hat last summer, and I was really, really pleased with it. And their aesthetic and kind of the clothing they designed for both on the course and off, I thought was really interesting. So I thought it was interesting that in the past month or so, we had Ricky re-up and also Keegan move away from one of the big, you know, clothiers or big brands in the golf world, like a Nike or a Callaway, and go to a place like Travis Matthew. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, I don't know really all that much about the environment, but it seems like there would be opportunity there for a smaller company to make headway in golf, because it kind of, from the outside, it kind of feels like the big guns, specifically Nike, just sort of have token interests. Like, they obviously they signed Tiger and that was gigantic, but it's not like, I don't know if Nike's pushing golf all the time.
That's fair. And even the Nike athletes, like Tiger has his own look. You know, they make clothes specific for Tiger. They make clothing specifically for Rory. But the fact that Nike's such a behemoth, the way that Keegan and Ricky are going, they more associate, it's almost like they associate with their brand more because there's less folks on the Puma team, less folks on the Travis Matthew team, as opposed to Tiger and Rory, where, you know, Nike outfits dozens and dozens of pro golfers. So it's a very interesting discussion. I'm really looking forward to seeing what Keegan's going to be wearing in upcoming tournaments and the kind of look that Travis Matthew and he will partner on. It'll be really cool to watch. So wanted to throw in that quick okie doke before we go do a deep dive on the Super Bowl. Fun fact, we're the only podcast talking about the Super Bowl this week. I don't think anybody else is doing
it. No, I don't think so.
We have exclusive rights to talk about the Super Bowl this week. We can insert like a laugh track there if we need to. So our team, the New England Patriots, have made it all the way to the big game. We're not going to talk about the deflated football nonsense. And the brand or the uniforms that we loved, especially last year when they were in the game, the Seattle Seahawks, are their opposition. So let's start with the team who's in it for the second straight Super Bowl, which, by the way, is an incredible feat if you're the Seahawks.
Yeah, it really is.
Last year we talked about how much we thought their uniforms worked well, as opposed to the Broncos, who were a disaster. And I think the things that we thought worked well with the Seahawks last year are still true this year. As far as I know, they haven't made any significant changes to kind of their uniform. They might have thrown in an alternate with a, you know, a colored pant here and there or something of that sort. But essentially, we kind of look at the Seahawks as the Oregon football of the NFL. They're the ones who have kind of the widest array of uniforms. They have the funkiest uniforms, kind of the most futuristic uniforms. And from the outside, not only do I think they work well, but I think the Seahawks look in general is really cool.
It's one of my favorites. It's funny when you talk about comparing them to Denver last year, and I think it's similar this year because I think the Patriots uniforms and the Broncos uniforms are similar in ways. I feel like they're both a little bit stuck in the mid-90s. And Seattle's definitely has one foot in, if not the now, then maybe even the next decade. And it's refreshing, but it makes me wonder, like, if they're a trendsetter and other teams and, you know, colleges down the line start picking up cues from them, will, in 2025, will we think, oh, that looks so, you know, 2013?
That surely might be the case. My sense is that will be true, and that might be true with any design. You know, I'm not sure, you know, looking backwards. I'm with you on the Pats. The Pats look definitely feels dated. You know, they have kind of the benefit of there's equity in that uniform. Like, it's been around a while, or a version of that uniform has been around for a long time. And we're so used to seeing the Pats in the postseason. It gets, you know, kind of extra equity over time, too. But it's very stale and sterile. There's not a lot of character to it. And I almost feel like their throwback unis that are like fire engine red and bright white, I almost feel like those work better than these ones.
They absolutely work better. And that is, when we talk about something that's, that is, it's more of a timeless look. We sort of mentioned it in the last episode about how the NFL has a lot of sort of classic looking jerseys, like the Cowboys and the Lions and the Packers and the 49ers. They all have similar looks. It's just, you know, like two color shirts with stripes on the shoulder, stripes on the pants, a stripe down the helmet, a logo on the side. And that Patriots throwback jersey fits into that. It's just, I mean, first of all, it screams America, which is what you want if your team's called the Patriots.
Absolutely.
It does it more so than the current, jersey does, I think. I think a lot of people would be really excited if the throwback jersey was the regular jersey.
I think so, too. I was looking at some previous photos of those unis getting ready for this episode, and there was a great shot of Irving Fryer in, like, a bright white shirt and fire engine red pants, and I was like, oh, that's a great look. And it, granted, it was a simple look and very straightforward. And, you know, maybe the guy hiking the old logo, maybe the guy hiking the ball through his legs is a little cheesy, but the uniform itself was just strong, and that worked really well. The Pats gray helmet is kind of, it's just so neutral. And that bright white helmet from the old uniform set, I thought, worked so much better. It just gave them much more character.
I'm so glad you sort of took a negative stance on Pat Patriot, because I was ready to kill him, and I was afraid that I was just going to be ostracized by all Patriots fans, because, like, any time there's a discussion of the Patriots uniforms, people come out of the woodwork to say that Pat Patriot should be back on the helmets and should be back as the logo. And I sort of get it. It's old school, it's classic, it's gritty, like, people remember it, but as a logo, it's not good. Like, it's not, like we mentioned in the podcast about the new NBC and ESPN graphics about how some of the team logos don't reproduce well at small sizes, that this logo is just, it's line art.
Absolutely.
You know, there's nothing, it's not iconic. Like, logos work best when they are simplified, fewer strokes, you know, minimalist to get the message across, and that is anything but. If people really want to bring it back old school, prior to Pat Patriot, what they had on their helmet was just a sort of very simple tri-corner hat, and I think that's a much better look.
Yeah, I was trying to think, because the current Pats logo, that what is referred to over time as Flying Elvis, especially when it was first introduced around here, I don't particularly think that it's great either, because it's just odd. It's an odd shape. It's an odd shape on the helmet itself. The way the colors are broken up and structured is also strange. It's just a strange logo. You know, in a perfect world, the Patriots would be represented with just a star, but the problem is the Cowboys, you know, they own that in the football world. But I wonder if there isn't some happy medium where they take the color scheme and kind of the structural scheme from the throwback unis, and then come up with some sort of new brand that maybe makes a nod towards Pat Patriot, but doesn't use it exactly.
Yeah.
And you're right. There's so much love there. I think because of the nostalgia and that alone. But yeah, as a logo, it does not work well.
It's like you compare it to like a logo like the Michael Jordan Jumpman logo, which is just a silhouette of a guy, and how much better that works because it's not a drawing of a guy, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't love the flying Elvis either, but I do think it works better just as a logo than the than Pat Patriot. I think that, like, maybe if you just lost the face from the Elvis and just kept the hat with the sort of streaming flag behind it, that might be an interesting look.
Agreed. I feel like they tried to humanize a shape that isn't really human.
But the Seahawks are anything but classic. They're certainly pushing the envelope for the NFL, and it mostly works for me. First of all, they have probably a top five helmet in the league for me. NFL helmets are awesome, but theirs is really great. And the part that really does it for me is the way that their logo is designed with the sort of long horizontal rectangle. It's able to wrap around and meet in the back of the helmet, and that wins the world for me.
Agreed. And I think we alluded to this last year too, that just a simple connection of those logos in the back is worth so many points. It's just, to be able to do that shows the flexibility of the brand and the logo, and it works so well.
Yeah, and then beyond that, they're taking elements that you see historically in football jerseys, you know, the TV numbers on the shoulders with a stripe pattern up there and then a stripe down the pants, but it's not just a simple shoulder stripe and a simple pants stripe. There are some symbols in there. There are some creative juxtaposition of the stripes, and there's obviously the what really gets your attention is that pop neon green color.
Do we know what uniforms are being worn by which team?
I was trying to figure that out today. Seattle is the home team, so that means they get the choice. So that normally at home they wear their full blue top, blue pants. But I saw like a promo picture that had it used previous game photographs, but it had the Patriots wearing blue and the Seattle wearing their gray alternates, but I wasn't able to figure out which ones they're wearing. I feel like it'll probably be the blues.
And I can't recall what they wore last year.
Had the white tops last year.
That's what I thought. It wasn't monochromatic, right? They wore blue pants?
Correct.
Okay. So we've talked about monochromatic uniform design before on this program, as they say in the biz. And I know you're not as huge of a fan as the monochromatic look as I might be, but I was curious to know your thoughts on, do you think it works better with Seattle, especially if they were to wear the all blue?
I do. Absolutely, I do. And it's always hard to visualize how it might work with other teams and different color schemes, but that deep, deep navy with the neutral gray and the pop of green, something about it just really works all the way up and down.
Do you think that has anything to do with Seattle kind of having a much more modern and futuristic brand over the past few years since the uniform design? Like, are you more apt to think that a monochromatic uniform in the NFL would work better for a more recently redesigned team? Maybe a better way to ask that is, do you associate monochromatic uniforms with kind of how do I want to ask this? Is it better? Does monochromatic work better for like a non-traditional team's uniform?
I think it does. Now that you mention it, yeah. Like I think the Broncos sometimes wear blue tops and blue bottoms, and I don't think it's a good look. I think they're better when they wear the white pants with the blue shirt. But like last year, I remember thinking it was a big bummer that Seattle didn't wear white pants with their white top.
Miami's a team that I've seen do that a lot, where they wear all white. And I think for them it actually works pretty well. I don't know if it's like a geographical thing. Like all white in Miami seems like something that would be worn like in everyday life. I don't know if that makes a difference, but I've seen a lot more of that from Miami in years past.
I feel like Pitbull usually wears all white, so.
And really, that's all we need to know. He basically is, anything he does, the Dolphins should do. Quick aside, the Dolphins, who made kind of a small iteration in their uniforms, I think 2 or 3 seasons ago, I think they look really sharp on the field.
Yeah.
They have such a unique color scheme. Like, no one else in the 4 major sports has that kind of aqua teal with white and then that almost, like, pale orange. It's just a really unique look.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got to say on that.
No, they're good.
Back to Seattle. Like I said, I'm a fan of monochromatic design. And you're right, it doesn't always work. But I think with Seattle, it's such a great look. I don't know if they would do it in a Super Bowl setting or not. And I think the deep blue for them works better than the all white, but it would be really cool to see them decked out in all blue. And then I imagine the Pats would go with white jerseys and blue pants.
There's something about the contrast with the blue and the gray and the green. Like one of my criticisms of the Patriots uniform is that they have at least on the home blue jerseys, they have a red border around the number. And I think it looks like it's trying to do too much, but I love the neon border on the Seahawks outfit. And I don't know whether it's the, like, almost luminescence of that color or whether it's just how well it contrasts with the dark blue. There's more contrast than there is between the blue and the, you know, navy blue and a straight red on the Patriots. I don't know exactly what it is, but It really works for Seattle. It's one of the nicer uniform sets in the league.
I absolutely think it's contrast. And whenever I talk about color theory, you know, you're sharing it with a client on my views on color, or sharing it with a younger designer. For me, color theory is strictly about contrast. So whether or not you use a deep blue or a deep green that are in the same tone, to me, is irrelevant, because there's so much subjectivity in the selecting of colors for a brand or for a set of colors that a company might use across their communication. So for me, it's all about contrast. You know, you use color to be able to separate different items visually, to be able to tell the difference, to also add depth to a design. So you're absolutely right. On the Pat's red outline of the numbers doesn't really do much, because it's so close to that blue of the uniform that there's no pop there. Whereas for Seattle, yes, the neon green is really unique and not a color that really exists across the league, but from a contrast perspective, it works so well and gives them great character in their uniforms.
Mm. We mentioned before about, you know, it's so tough to tell whether this uniform will look dated or classic, you know, 15, 20 years from now. But the pieces that I'm worried about on the Seahawks uniform are the repeat of the pants stripe with the symbols across the back of the neck on the shirt, and the stripe that runs from the shoulder across to the front of the chest. That it doesn't really follow a seam of the shirt. It just sort of sticks out there. It says the word Seahawks on it. It's almost like it's there just so they could add the word mark. And then there's the, I don't even know what to call it, but I imagine it's not textured, but it almost looks like a textured pattern on the helmet. That's a thing that I feel like either, I haven't really seen that before, and I feel like 15 years from now, either every team's going to have that or only them.
That's definitely the riskiest parts of the uniforms. You're right. Those are the parts that could get old quickly. Now with them, they're in the position to take a few more risks visually. So for them, it works well. But you're right. A couple years from now, it could be like, hey, that's getting a little cheese ball.
Yeah, and I don't really think anything about it doesn't work. It's just that, you know, you and I always tend towards a simpler look, and there are definitely simplifications that could be made to this set as it is.
One thing I find interesting about Seattle is they seem to be the current cool team. As if you're a youngster, you know, you're a 6, 7, 8, 9 year old, and you love the sport of football. In addition to the, you know, your local team, you might really want to root for Seattle. Not only have they been successful in recent years with a Super Bowl victory last year and some deep playoff runs, but their look and their brand and their stadium and the personalities on the team are just cool. In the same way that I think a lot of folks were big Cowboys fans back in the early 90s with Emmitt Smith, Michael Irvin, Troy Aikman teams. Yes, they won a lot, but a lot of folks looked at them as kind of having a cool brand.
Oh, I was going to go Raiders.
That might be an even better one, because the Raiders one definitely transcends any sort of success.
Yeah, that they're so terrible. Was like the Raiders were the cool brand when I was a kid. That's what I remember. I remember, like, my brother, who doesn't care about sports at all, had a Raiders jacket. I remember them definitely being the cool team. I would actually associate the Patriots more with the Cowboys in this sense, as sort of the team that... it's tough. Being a fan of the Patriots, I have no gauge of whether... I know that the general adult population sort of hates the Patriots, but I have no idea whether there are hundreds of thousands of kids that are big Patriots fans in this same way that we grew up with people who didn't live anywhere near the places but loved the 49ers because of Joe Montana and loved the Cowboys because of Troy Aikman.
Your Pats-Cowboys comparison makes a lot more sense. You're right. And you're right, I have no gauge either. Definitely, generally speaking, I'd say most folks hate the Patriots because they've been successful in the Spygate stuff and nobody likes Belichick. So that makes a lot of sense. I want to go back to the Raiders. It's a really interesting point because their color scheme, black and gray, is badass. And I feel like their uniform set and their apparel should be cooler than it is. Maybe it's because it's dated and it's no longer 1989. But I feel like with a bold black, like gray letters on black jerseys is so them. Like they own that. But I feel like they're missing out on the cool hip factor you're getting from Seattle.
I guess so. I don't know. That's another thing where Seattle is it could be heading towards trendy, but the cool factor I think mostly came from the color scheme, because there wasn't anything that crazy about those. You know, they were just black with gray gray numbers, and then a silver helmet with the logo on it. There wasn't anything envelope pushing about it, except for the. I mean, it was that color is just like the fear that those black jerseys put into you, and then you throw in the crazy fans, they got associated with the rising, you know, West Coast rap movement, and that, you know, put the fear into white America for a time too.
Very true. So maybe that's the next big change, or maybe that's how the next team that rebrands will make a big splash, is with a really interesting color scheme. Like for me, the team that is most desperate for a rebrand are the Carolina Panthers. Their uniforms are so 1996 that it's embarrassing. Mm-hmm. Or whatever year they came into the league. They just feel really outdated and cheesy. And maybe they're a team that, well, independent of them, maybe that color scheme thing is kind of what helps with the cool factor, and that neon green with Seattle and the black and silver of Oakland. So that's definitely something to look out for if any team comes out with a big rebrand in the near future. Is it going to be one where they kind of push the envelope with a color scheme? It's a really interesting thought.
Yeah. And when I was looking at pictures and doing some research for tonight, I came away thinking, man, the Patriots could use a fresh look.
Agreed.
Whether it's going to that throwback uniform, but I group them in now with a sort of, if you were sort of to tier off uniforms, I'd associate the Patriots with Carolina and Jacksonville and Denver. Those ones that all sort of got the rebrand in the early to mid 90s, or came into the league in the 90s, and have stayed that way ever since. And the Patriots have sort of come out best of all of them because they were added some success along with the rebrand. And Denver did too. It was almost immediately after they made the switch that they won the two Super Bowls, right? Or did they win one of them with the old orange uniforms?
I'm pretty sure they won both with the new unis. I just don't know how close it was to that first win. But you're right, it was pretty quick. I know that.
Yeah, but you always see this. Teams make these changes when they're... You don't often see a team riding a high, making a switch. Like, I don't expect the Patriots to change it up now. I expect they'll change it up in however many years from now when Brady and Belichick are gone and the team is struggling through 5 or 6, 3-13 seasons or whatever. But I associate that look with a time period, which is... It's easy to put down. It's so hard to pull something off that's timeless. You know, that's what you want out of any design or movie or music. But it's subtle when it's done. But it's easier said than done, I guess I should say. But that's why I tend to like the classic looks, like something like Green Bay, where that's the same uniform they had when Lombardi was the coach, but I don't associate the team as being stuck when Lombardi was the coach.
It's a good point. It's such a simple look that it's flexible over time. If I play devil's advocate on the current Patriots look, it's only to point out that it was a big leap forward from the uniforms that Bledsoe first wore when he came in the league, which were brutal.
Totally.
They had that really funky font for their... or typeface, rather, for their numbers, and it was italic, and there was a red shadow on them on, like, a ugly royal blue color uniform. They were really rough, and they just looked like super cheese 90s design, and they didn't last long. They might have lasted, like, maybe 4 seasons, and then they moved over to, at least that's how I remember it, and then they moved over to essentially what the look they have now. You know, it was tweaked a little bit over time, but... That look that Bledsoe had was just bad news.
Yeah, and they had logo overload. They had the flying Elvis on the helmets and on the shoulders. I don't know. Nothing was good about that.
Agreed. Quick Bledsoe story. So one is, I was at a networking event last week, and there was some story about Bledsoe on the TV, and I haven't been able to find it yet. I think it was just about him and his life and what's going on with his wine. I really wanted to watch it. And the other thing is, I happened to come across the 01 AFC Championship, the year, the first Super Bowl they won under Brady, watching the highlights of Brady getting destroyed on a big hit with like 2 or 3 minutes to go in the first half, and Bledsoe comes back in for the first time since week 2 or 3 of the season. I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. He marches him down the rest of the field, throws a touchdown pass, and the Pats go on to win. I think Bledsoe played the rest of the game, and the Pats go on to win. And then, of course, Brady took over back in the Super Bowl, and they win their first Super Bowl under Brady. And I was so excited because I was one of the guys who was a big Bledsoe guy. So when Brady first came in, I just thought Bledsoe got treated not so great. And to have somebody take your spot through injury, that was like, for me, that was the first time that ever happened on such a grand scale. And to be able to rewatch Bledsoe coming in and leading the team down the field for a touchdown in a really important game, just it made me so happy as a Pats fan. It was really cool. And then, of course, I went down the YouTube funnel and I saw an interview. Terry Bradshaw was interviewing Brady and Bledsoe at the same time leading up to the Super Bowl. Must have been a year that Fox was covering it. And it was like kind of cringe-inducing, kind of awkward, because Bradshaw was asking about, like, Drew, what do you think of this guy? And Drew was just trying to be really professional. And he's like, you know, Tom's done a great job. And, you know, we work together to do the best thing for the team. But, you know, underneath Drew was like, oh, that guy stole my spot.
Yeah.
And it was such a unique story. I know it's happened a little bit more in recent times in different sports. But back then it was such a huge deal because the Pats were a laughingstock before we got Bledsoe and Parcells. And Bledsoe really was the team for several seasons. So when that whole story went down, it was tough for fans. They didn't know what to do.
I had forgotten about that moment when Brady got knocked out until you just told that story. As soon as you started saying it, I was like, it all came back to me, but I completely knocked that out of my memory at some point.
I can recall being at a friend of the family's house either sometime during that season after Bledsoe had gone down or during that game, I forget. And I was like all team Bledsoe. I wasn't a Brady hater. I just thought Bledsoe had got a bum deal. And then when he came back in, like, my face lit up. I was like, oh my God, this, you could not have written this any better. You know, Drew marches down the field and throws a touchdown pass. And from what I understand, the second half, he didn't play all that great, but he also didn't turn the ball over, which he was, you know, prone to do in his later years. And they went on, they beat Pittsburgh, and they go on to win, you know, they upset St. Louis in that crazy Super Bowl, which I was sitting in Del Plaine Hall at Syracuse University to watch that one. That was a good time.
Fourth floor Watson.
Good work. I remember when Ty Law picked off the pass, and he, you know, brought it back for a pick six and was running down the field. I remember myself and some of my buddies who were Pats fans, we just, like, booked it down the hallway screaming like banshees. It was completely ridiculous. And that game was so much fun to watch as a Pats fan because 98% of football fans were convinced that St. Louis is going to win by 20.
I'm pretty sure I remember wearing my Ty Law jersey when he picked off that pass.
That's awesome.
Which I don't have anymore because I got rid of when I grew up and made my rule about you're a grown man, don't wear double XL clothes anymore. I kind of wish I'd kept on to it or tailored it or
something.
That's
so great. Yeah, I can't. I don't think I have any left either. Yeah, I had the same rule as you're a grown ass man. Come on now. The only one I have is I still have the green and gold KG Celts tank, but it's like it fits me. It's not 22 sizes too big.
Right.
So it's good for like the beach and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. If the football jersey had fit me and I wasn't wearing it like a muumuu, then I probably would have held on to it. That's why I'm a big
good
fan
stuff.
Of the t-shirt jersey anymore. It's two birds with one stone.
There you go. So for any listeners out there who despise the Patriots or any nostalgia, forgive the brief trip down memory lane. But I'll tell you from a legacy standpoint, if the Pats can pull off another victory, oof, four Super Bowls in what, 14 years? That's impressive.
Absolutely. And I want it really bad.
Yeah, I know. I agree. It's weird. I've said this to you before that as I've gotten older, I've become, generally speaking, less passionate about following my teams in sports through the whole spectrum. You know, I'm still really loyal and really a big fan of the Celts, and I still invest a lot of time in following the sport of golf. But outside of that, I don't invest a ton of time in other sports, even though I know what's going on in the season. But this one feels a little bit different for the Pats, just because we realize that Brady only has so many years left, Belichick only has so many years left, and the last two that we were in were such crushing defeats that to have that happen again would be such a bummer. And I really would like them to win.
Yes. Please to win, Patriots.
Please to win. I vote for pleasing to win. So they may lose on the uniform front, and they might lose on the fact.
I hate to say it, but
I know
it's
and they certainly lose.
It's a landslide on the design.
I agree, and they certainly lose on the rest of the country not liking them front.
Well, I think that's the other big bummer about. I hate to bring it up, but that's the other big bummer about the deflated footballs is that I felt like. Going into this, I was like, this might be the first Super Bowl since the St. Louis one, since 01, where most of the country's rooting for the Patriots. Because I feel like the Seahawks are rubbing some people the wrong way. They've had just enough success that haters are coming out, and they're sort of, when you're good and outspoken, like Sherman and Marshawn Lynch are, that tends to turn off the masses. And so I felt like maybe we'll have a chance that we'll have most of the support, and then all of a sudden, boop, nope, once a cheater, always a cheater, and now it's everything's turned back around.
That's definitely been the message, and you're right. Some of the Seahawks personalities are brash. That doesn't mean that they're bad guys, but you're right, that can certainly turn off certain NFL fans.
Not me, though. I love it.
Oh yeah, me too.
These Marshawn Lynch interviews the last couple of days have been awesome.
They're so genius because I don't think Lynch is a dummy. I think he's stupid like a fox. Like, I think he's a really smart guy.
Oh, absolutely.
And everything you hear about him from the rest of his teammates is he's the greatest thing ever. And I can't imagine he's blackmailed all his teammates into saying these things. And he's such a hard player to tackle and a really good player. I'm with you. I'm in the Lynch fan club. We're all about that action, as he said last year. But even Deion couldn't get anything out of him this year. I had to rewatch that short, like, 2-minute clip of Deion interviewing him last year when he didn't show up for interviews, and it's so brilliant, both from Deion's side and on Marshawn's side. We're going to have to link to that in the show notes. Great Super Bowl media moments. I can't think of many more that I like more than that. But yeah, Seattle, for me, still has the cool factor. And you're right, there was a little bit of momentum, like, oh, New England might be the underdog here. But now it's, no, they're the big hate machine. And I don't think a lot of people will be rooting for them. And I don't think there's a clear favorite in this game. I think it's like a coin flip game.
I have no idea what the line is. I feel like I knew it at one point, but I haven't kept tabs on what it is.
I think it started with Seattle, like, -1, or it might have started as a pick'em, and the last I saw it was New England -1. So it's moved in the Pats' favor a point and a half, 2 points, depending on what legal gambling site you are looking at. But more or less, it's a pick'em game. I think that's kind of where the action's going.
I mean, it's... hopefully it's good, or hopefully the Patriots win by 50.
Yeah, if we could just reverse what happened last year when the game was over very quickly for Seattle and they won by a million, but have that happen with the Pats winning by a million, I'd be more than happy with that. Any last thoughts on the unis, or do we pretty well cover it?
I think we did pretty good.
Go Pats. That's my only last word on the Super Bowl.
Yeah, go Pats.
So coming up is a nice little milestone for the design game. Coming up in the next few weeks will be a year anniversary of the first recorded episode that we did. And also, if everything flies the way it should, our next episode could be a live in studio with both David and I in the same room at the same time. So that's right. So we're looking forward to that. The plan is to cover all things NBA with the All-Star weekend around the corner. We'll talk about some recent uniform stories revolving like one game uniforms for a couple teams. We'll talk about the All-Star game. We'll talk a lot about All-Star picks as NBA and basketball heads, where we invest a lot of time in this and, you know, we think it's important. So we'll talk about that too. And just the design of the picks in general. I know David has a lot of thoughts on that.
Oh yeah.
This is assuming, of course, rumor has it that David and I will also be playing the actual game of basketball together in the same gym next week, and if that happens, it'll be the first time in a long time. And so this is under the assumption that I don't like blow out my knee while we play and I'm unable to move or speak or anything like that. But if that's the case, we'll be sure to do an in-depth recap on our next episode as well.
As long as the vocal cord's intact, we're good for podcasting. We don't need knees anymore.
That's right. If we have to lay horizontally in different parts of the room to record, we can definitely make that happen.
While your wife feeds us applesauce.
I like it. I guess a great visual. We'll have to draw that one like a courtroom drawing. All right, folks. That's going to wrap up our Super Bowl episode for this year. We hope that you're able to watch the game with friends and loved ones, and we hope that you're rooting for the Pats. But we also hope that you're rooting for the Seattle's uniforms because they're so much better. If you would, before the game, make sure you follow us on Twitter. We'd love for you to go on and leave us a review on iTunes. If you've got a minute and can write it out, great. If you only got 5 seconds, maybe you can just leave us a 5-star review. It would help us a lot and kind of gives us some equity over time with iTunes that makes us look good and gets more ears to listen to our work. So if you could do that, we appreciate it. David, we hope you will have safe travels to the Commonwealth if that all works out next week. And until then, we will say sayonara from the design game.
Peace.
Go Pats!